Before we officially start this podcast, I just want to remind everyone that the IB Sports Podcast Network is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. If you're on iTunes, we would appreciate it if you would rate and review 5 stars, please. You can also find IB Sports on all social media platforms, including Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. There is also a premium membership that allows you to post without being approved by an admin, levy fines, receive free gambling picks, and a whole lot more. Welcome to another edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast feed. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, as always, my partners in the six-man tag that is life, Ronnell Tinsley and my man Sam Howe. What's going on, guys?
Gentlemen, how's it going tonight? I am feeling fantastic and ready to go.
I like it. You got the Deadpool shirt going. You're looking
yes,
good,
sir.
Bro. I'm also very happy and honored to have with us Johan of Mark's Name Joe podcast, YouTube channel, correct?
Yes, that is.
And then the Keeping It Kayfabe Twitter handle, correct?
Keep Up With Kayfabe.
Damn, I knew I was going to mess that up. I should have wrote it down,
close.
Joe.
You're close.
But he is a great follow on Twitter. Their podcast is outstanding. Me and Sam actually went on their YouTube channel to do a preview of the last NXT TakeOver, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we're very happy to have Joe with us this week.
Glad to be here.
We got a lot of stuff to cover. We're going to do our typical superlatives of the week. You know, for those that have not listened before, we do superlatives of the week for all four wrestling shows. So we're going to have this week, we did cut out the Wrestler on a Rise and Wrestler on the Slide because we're also going to do a Hell in a Cell preview at the end of the podcast. But this week and all weeks, the categories are Face of the Week, Heel of the Week, Match of the Week, Promo of the Week, Storyline you need to pay attention to. And then something that we added last week that I really am glad that we did is just the show that won the week. We really didn't have to do that because AEW was winning for so long, but SmackDown has been honestly awesome for about 2 months now, to where I think it's actually a competition, which is great for wrestling fans. But why don't we start off with Face of the Week? I'll go ahead and go first. It's Kushida from NXT. I have been pleasantly surprised by how much they have pushed him over the last month, starting at TakeOver, obviously with his win over Velveteen Dream and what was a really fun and great match. And then, I mean, I don't know how much bigger it gets in NXT than winning a triple threat match versus Ciampa and Velveteen Dream. You can really see that they have big plans for this guy, which I'm excited about because he's great in the ring. As you guys, or I don't know if Joe knows this, but obviously Sam and Ronnell do. I don't really follow wrestling outside of WWE and AEW. I'm not a New Japan guy or, you know, TNA or any of that stuff. So this is really my first exposure to him in the last couple of months. I have heard a lot of buzz about him, and I'm starting to understand why. I hope to see that they continue this push because all I can think about every time I see him in the ring is, man, it's going to be fun to see this guy wrestle Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, mix it up with some of the bigger guys, which he's proven he can look good and have great matches with. I mean, Velveteen Dream is not a small guy. Ciampa obviously is not a big guy, but he's big-ish for NXT. So he is my face of the week. Joe, you're the guest. Why don't you tell us who your face of the week from the week of wrestling is?
Oh man, I was hoping to go last on this one because I've got something controversial to say.
Oh, well,
I don't think.
Oh, please, please.
We'll let you go last then. We'll go ahead and go to Ronnell then. Let's save
okay.
this.
All right. All right. Well, then, yeah, because mine is a really simple one. Mine is the New Day. You know, they're handling the split well. They put on a really fantastic 6-man match on SmackDown, which shouldn't be a surprise. You know, they were facing the Bar for the 257th millionth time. So, and then, you know, of course, Kofi and Sheamus in a singles, of course, went and burned down the house. That was close to being my match of the week, but it's like, you know, unfortunately we've seen those guys so many times. So mine was the New Day. Sam, what you got?
I went Daniel Bryan because he is at this point my favorite active pro wrestler. He is, and just like getting to see him back after 2 months and watching him put over all of the talent that he put over on SmackDown was just really exciting for me. And like,
did you hear his comments about the IC title, Sam? That he really, and this was both in an interview and then on, I don't know if it was like Raw Talk or SmackDown Talk, one of those shows. He said he wants to win the IC title and then do what he had originally said he was going to do when he had his feud with AJ Styles for the belt, basically kind of the Cody Rhodes or, you know, John Cena U.S. title with the IC belt, where every week basically he would be wrestling on TV for the belt, putting people over. I know that's practically a wet dream for you.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if that's what he does for the next year before he goes to Japan and AEW, like as a more part-time wrestler, which.
So you think he's leaving?
I don't think he has anything else to accomplish. He, you know, he re-signed last time for 3 years, and I just, you know, I think going like what he's going to be 41. He'll be 40 in May. I know his birthday is also my oldest friend's.
Yeah, sure.
It is May 22nd.
Oh, I thought you were saying Daniel Bryan was your oldest friend. No. I got you. I was like, wow,
I'm louder than 500 feet of my oldest friend. But yeah, Daniel Bryan is, I think that he'll be leaving the WWE. I would love to see him in AEW in New Japan and a Luchas de Apuestas match. But yeah, him being back and him just like being babyface ass Bryan Danielson with his wife and daughter on the Thunderdome and like talking about all the great talent, like putting over all the people that I'd love to see him wrestle. And that was my face of the week. And now I want to hear the controversial pick from Johan.
I don't think there's a baby face in wrestling right now that I give a crap about. I think that this week was incredibly light on the work from people that I would consider baby faces. There was a lot of great tweener work from people that others might call heels.
You put like, Jey Uso honestly, in that category?
Well, Jey Uso, I gave a big hoot about him going into his first pay-per-view match with Roman Reigns. I felt that he was a great character at that point. I'm a little surprised that we're going into the second pay-per-view match with him, but he's doing a good job. I just don't think he's doing like he's the top of my wrestling pantheon for the week kind of thing. I look at things like Eddie Kingston's promo that he cut, which I'm going to, you know, already drop right now as my promo of the week, that I thought that was a very close to babyface promo for what I would consider. That was a very tweener thing for him to say. He made John Moxley a heel in my mind for what he was saying. He made me buy in. I drank the Kool-Aid, but he's not a face. I really wanted to pick somebody, but I really can't think of a single person in wrestling right now that is an active babyface that I cared about this week.
See, my theory, by the way, is that Keith got rid of Wrestler on the Slide because he didn't want to hear me complain about Keith Lee losing in like the most 50-50 ass booking possible.
It was partly. I've already heard it twice this week on the phone. You know, I didn't want to make our listeners listen to it as well.
3 for 3, baby. I think that. That's perfectly acceptable to say that there is no one that really stood out to you.
So I guess is the bigger question, are baby faces basically dead in wrestling? Because you could make this argument for quite some time that most wrestlers that get really over are, as Joe was, you know, pointing out, more of a tweener role. And it's almost like they're kind of just rolling people out there and letting fans kind of decide, who do you want to root for? The Hurt Business was a prime example a couple of weeks ago. You know, we were arguing like, are they making them face? Are they making them heel? Ones if they're not doing either and they're just putting them out there. And if, you know, fans cheer, they cheer. And if they boo, they boo. And when there's not a crowd there to react, it makes a lot more sense than it would if there was a crowd there and you're, you know, trying to get them involved into the match.
I think the Thunderdome and this whole COVID presentation has done a great job of showing us what WWE wants us to think, because they'll hit the "this is awesome" chant, they'll hit the yays, they'll hit the boos, they'll do whatever they want for wherever they think it should go.
Like an 80s sitcom.
Exactly. Right now, track, yeah. Roman Reigns would be coming out to thunderous applause and cheers.
Absolutely.
He is very much so a heel with how WWE is booking him. I think that sticking to the traditional good guy, underdog, yay, evil, bad guy, boo, needs to go away. The Rock became WWE's biggest babyface by being a jackass. Stone Cold Steve Austin beat up his boss on a weekly basis. That's not something a good guy does. That gets him over. Like, people want to cheer things that they want to cheer, and it's not always going to fit into Vince's, like, oh, this guy's a plucky underdog. Roman Reigns is never a plucky underdog. Even no one Sam's, should ever cheer him for that.
Even Sam's hero, Daniel Bryan, it was his great work as a heel that, you know, led to the yes chant, and that was when, and now don't get me wrong, he did a great job as a, you know, just a typical, you know, red American, you know, baby face in wrestling terms when he did that whole, you know, run up to WrestleMania 30. But as Joe was saying, you know, it was the heel Daniel Bryan that everybody got behind. And then obviously he had that moment at WrestleMania where Sheamus squashed him, and that just, I mean, it just exploded from there. So it's going to be interesting to see how that, you know, changes wrestling. Cause we've actually discussed this on the podcast, Joe, is like, it's going to be weird when you get fans back, because we don't really know who's over, who's not over. Like, we have an idea, but it's just, it's so different when you don't have that crowd there reacting or hearing, you know, who's getting the loudest pop or what was the match of the night by reaction. And, you know, it's just been different, and it's going to be a little weird because this has extended so long when we get back to our normal wrestling, quote unquote.
I just wanted
to go ahead.
I hard disagree on, I think that the plucky underdog babyface I will give Joe is, you know, I think should be done away with. But I think that the, you know, that Austin, like, McMahon was always sort of a scumbag heel. And Austin, the example that I always go to is that he was always kind of an anti-hero in this, but even then, like, there, if you guys remember his feud with The Undertaker, with the Ministry of Darkness, like, as much as he hated Vince McMahon, he still saved Stephanie. He still came out, and there was a degree of honor to him as a character, which made him interesting. I think that there's, I think that you have to have, just the way that the art of pro wrestling works, you need a face. You need a good guy.
And you can define that differently. And I mean, even more from what, you know, kind of Joe was getting at, I hate more than anything the cowardly heel. You know, like, oh, it's so tired. It's like, to me, the greatest heels are the ones that are actually good and they win on their own. And that's what makes them heel, is they're sitting there telling you, I'm going to beat you. I'm probably going to try to cheat if I can. But I can actually beat you, and I'm not going to have to run away from every fight or, you know, cheat to win every single match. So again, hopefully we're going to be moving to some different things, and we'll get into in a minute that there was something very different, this week from the pro wrestling. I've never seen anything like it, and it was awesome. So, let's start off with Ronnell. Who's your heel of the week?
Piggybacking off of what got Sam so upset and touching on, the, is he an actual heel tweener thing that Joe had just brought up? Mine is Braun Strowman. Had a really good showing versus the world champion, even though that's kind of in a face role. What he's been, technically has been a heel. So, and then got a clean victory, which surprised the ever loving crap out of me, over Keith Lee.
Well, it wasn't clean. I mean, well, he loved him.
He well, put clean, him in the dick.
Clean-ish. Yeah. Cleanish. You know, it wasn't, maybe it was like, you know, one of those dastardly things that he kind of picked up from Roman from the butt kick and he took on Friday night. But you know, you get a win over Keith Lee, and now, you know, you're gonna feud with Keith Lee, it looks like. You know, good for you, Braun. You know, he got my nod.
Most 50-50 ass booking.
It's not going to be 50-50. They're going to, he got a cheap win, and I'm telling you, it's
going
to lead
to. Now, Keith Lee's going to get a cheap win.
No, he's going to get
it. This is WWE's 2020 dick feud. Like, it happened with Shinsuke and AJ Styles and ruined everybody's summer.
I think he's going to get a clean win. Like, I think that this is going to lead.
Yeah, in six pay-per-views.
Survivor Series.
Maybe on the kickoff for the Royal Rumble.
I think so.
No. See, I was making a joke. I was actually, my 50-50 comment was more about Braun, where the 50-50 was that he loses to Roman. And I don't, it gets to something that bothers me about the WWE, which is that they do this too often, which is where they go, well, you know, like, and I've said this, why do it? You control the universe. Why have Braun, you know, if you want him to keep looking strong, why have him go over Keith Lee, even if he did kick him in the dick?
All right, kick him in the dick. It's you go ahead with your heel of the week.
My heel of the week was Eddie Kingston, who I think has been doing, and it's interesting. I was sort of out of the indie scene when he was, I'm actually, you know, going to surreptitiously check Wikipedia to find out where he wrestled. But I thought
NWA was recent.
You know, I know from what he said, he's wrestled in,
Is he really good in the ring? Because, again, I haven't seen him other than, I think, one match in AEW. Like, is he a great character talker, or is he also somebody that can actually really go in the ring? Do any of y'all know?
I think he's a serviceable wrestler. I think he's he doesn't work as soft as The Miz, but I think Miz is a good comparison where he's mostly mic skills, but he can work in the ring. I think we're going to see him do incredible things, though, at Full Gear in his main event match with Moxley.
I assume that that'll be a death match. You know, they wrestled together in CZW. I assume it'll be a garbage match, which you don't have to exactly be, you know, Kenta Kobashi to look great in.
You just got to be a little crazy.
Yeah, you just got to be willing to do violent stuff. I'm hoping that I thought that his promos, I thought that he's really got, I mean, he's not going to win. I mean, John Moxley could get struck by lightning and he will pull, and Eddie Kingston will pull the limp dead body of John Moxley on top of him to win that match. But he's done a great job of selling me that maybe he won't.
All right, Joe, what's your heel of the week?
I'm going to keep the love fest for Eddie Kingston going because I totally agree with Sam. I think he is doing a tremendous job with what he's doing on the microphone. I think that he is putting him, like, I was watching that promo that they showed him cut after AEW went off the air last week. And first off, I was really upset at the fact that they had the cheery AEW theme song going on under it. I was ripped while they were doing that because it ruined it for me.
I
went back, I watched it again, and everything that he's saying, I've said this about MJF before, he could sell ice to an Eskimo. This guy, he could say anything and I'll be like, yes, sir. And I believe everything that comes out of his mouth. I hope that he backs it up. You know, they have an I Quit match, which, you know, you could say what you want about how they're having a pay-per-view I Quit match. WWE's having a pay-per-view I Quit match coming up as well. Oh, well. But I hope that there's something more at stake in the end. I hope that it's not just Eddie Kingston, you know, quitting. I hope that maybe he goes away for a little bit after it if he ends up losing. But I do think this is going to be a gruesome match. The two of them love each other, so they're going to kill each other. And it's going to be it's going to be uncomfortable to watch at the end. I guarantee that.
The Omega match to me with Moxley was borderline uncomfortable. Because, like, I have a hard time concussions and stuff. Yeah. You know, they were beating the hell out of each other.
That one, I didn't get as emotionally invested in. I feel like that one was, like, a lot of hardcore for the sake of hardcore. And I wasn't super into that match. But this match is going to feel like two brothers beating the piss out of each other. It's going to be everything that people want from Roman versus Jay, but it's actually going to happen.
Has anybody else felt really underwhelmed by Moxley as champ?
I think you've heard me on this podcast say that I think that he got a little stale as champ in the last couple of months. I think a lot of it is he lives so much off of the crowd reaction. I mean, yeah. I think back to when he won the belt. I mean, the place was going nuts.
Think about his debut.
Exactly. And it's really hurt him. And that's no, you know, offense to him. It's the same thing with McIntyre. I just think right now it's really difficult to be champion. The only reason Reigns is so exciting is because it's so different from what his character has been previously. And he's with Paul Heyman, you know, I mean, there's just all these things, but we're only 2 months in. If it's, you know, 3-4 months down the line, it might be the same deal. Cause you know, both McIntyre and Moxley have been champion for basically the entire, you know, 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, Dick's
if
like-
I can just jump in on sure. that. I honestly, with this Kingston thing, I actually liked Moxley's promo because it seemed, you know, he had a little more to give, you know, at least emotionally towards, it wasn't just like a hollow, you know, I'm doing, just doing my thing. I'm, you know, going to tell you, I'm going to smash your head and I'm going to smash you in the head with a, you know, with a hammer or something like that. I'm going to drag you. He actually talking about, I'm going to either bust you up until you give this angle up or I'm going to get my friend back. So that came close to being my promo of the week just because, and this was before we had gotten Kingston's second one.
So my heel of the week is Jericho MJF. I was blown away. Me and Sam actually said on the podcast last week that what are they going to do with this dinner? Like, this is probably going to be bad. Like, I'm worried, you know, these are two people that I'm very excited to see whether they team up, whether they feud. I just want to see these two guys together because they're both great. And then them singing a musical would have been the last thing I would have ever thought was where they were going to go. And it was fantastic. Like when it finished, I literally, and I can't remember how many times I've done this on any wrestling program, rewinded it back and watched it again because I was just shocked. And the whole segment was great because when it started and they were, you know, bickering about the steak and stuff, I chuckled, but I was kind of like, okay, is this what this is going to be? And then, you know, they had the laugh about Orange Cassidy. And then to break into it, and then to find that it's basically a Rat Pack song, it's great. I am so excited for these two guys. I talked about it when we had the Firefly Funhouse match at Mania. I love when wrestling takes chances. This was definitely a chance, and it worked. And oh, by the way, MJF and Jericho both can sing. Like, we knew Jericho good. I didn't know MJF really good. It was great. Like, it was
could
great.
Could really sing.
Even Brittany was like, this is, she goes, they can sing. And I go, well, Jericho, you know, is in a band, don't forget. But it blew me away. And it's funny that, you know, you could argue, are these guys really heel coming to the point that Joe is making that, you know, these are two of the more over guys on AEW who are definitely heels in their actions. But, you know, if we're going crowd reactions, but it's like what I said, what is more heel than singing like basically Broadway and it working? It's just the arrogance and stuff that it has to take, the moxie, the, you know, the confidence in your character. And it just like, bravo to them. Bravo to the segment. I love it when wrestling takes chances, especially with its biggest stars. They did it with Bray Wyatt in the Firefly Funhouse match and it worked gangbangers. Same thing here. My heel of the week. And honestly, if we had a wrestler of the week, it would have been the same thing. Even though they didn't have a match, just because I was just so impressed by a 6 minute and, you know, 30-second segment.
I watched it like a giddy schoolgirl the entire time. I tweeted today, people that haven't watched it at least 60 times, what the hell is wrong with you? It was amazing. And my wife was just like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I'm like, this is the greatest sports entertainment thing I've ever seen. It was picture perfect.
Like when MJF started singing, I was like, wait, hold on a second. Let me continue to listen because maybe this is recorded. No, this is them singing. This dude can freaking what?
It was a flex and for sure.
The choreography and all of that, you know, adding the girl, like just the whole thing was amazing. I couldn't, like, I had, you know, saw talks about it on social media and such. And I literally, you know, just watched it earlier today. And I was like, this is what they were, like I was blown away, even though I had known it was coming.
So the disadvantage that I have of living, it's advantage, disadvantage, is that the disadvantage is I get surprised less because everything's on tape delay here. The advantage is, though, is that I know what I want to see. And when that happened, like Keith and I talked about this, that I thought that it was going to be a little bit My Dinner with Andre, which is a like a movie I know about because of Community. And
you'd be proud of me. I Wikipedia'd and Googled it after we talked.
Yeah,
so now I get the joke.
So it was just like, and then they fucking, like, then they did a goddamn Broadway routine. And I was like, well, you know, you did it again. Like I thought it was just a great, you know, just a great segment. I can't say enough good things about it.
So let's move on to match of the week. I'm going to start. It was the tag team Fatal 4-Way for an opportunity to face FTR, the Young Bucks versus Private Party versus Butcher and the Blade versus Dark Order. And this is something Sam talks about a lot on the podcast. And I just want to reiterate it here that just because you know the outcome doesn't mean it can't be a successful match, successful storyline. Everybody knew when they set this up, the Young Bucks are going to be the next team to face FDR at a pay-per-view. I mean, it just, this is the match people want to see. I know I do. I think everybody does. Basically, from the moment FTR showed up, it's what they've been building. But a lot of teams in this situation, aka WWE probably, but it just had, you know, a tag team match where the Young Bucks faced one other tag team, and it would be pretty boring. But by putting four teams in, which I love it when you have multi tag team matches, where whether it be a triple threat tag team match or this way, a fatal four way, just the action, because tag team matches in general are so much more fast paced. And it hit all the high spots. And it's been something that I've been clamoring for AEW to do more of, because I feel like that their tag team division is arguably their biggest strength. I mean, they're so loaded in the tag team division, and I wish they would highlight it more and have more matches like this with bigger stakes, because yes, you have, you know, a few tight matches like the Best Friends, you know, match against Ortiz and those guys, Santana Ortiz, but you don't have a lot of, you know, matches that are for title opportunities. And the rankings have been a little confusing with the tag team, not nearly as straight line as you can in the singles division. So I love this match. I'm so excited about the Young Bucks versus FTR. I'm kind of hoping they do a 2 out of 3 falls. I just think that would be fantastic for those two teams. That's something that old school tag team wrestling did all the time. I think of the Hart Foundation versus Demolition at SummerSlam. You had, you know, Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson versus the Road Warriors way back in the day, and the NWA had a 2 out of 3 classic. But that was my match of the week. Joe, what was yours?
Well, I just want to say that that tag match was very good. And that's also been a very controversial match, because there was a spot in it that did a very bad number to Alex Reynolds.
He was
laid out for a very long time. I thought at first it was a comedic oversell, because it looked very planned with how Blade dragged him into the corner, but then he just stayed there. And I'm like, this is not good. Watching it back, you can see him trying to motion to the ref, but he couldn't even muster up the strength to do anything.
It reminds you of Hardy a few months ago in the pay-per-view.
Unfortunately. It's not a good look for the company, but in that moment, there's so much chaos going on in the ring. There's 8 people flying around.
It's much more understandable than the match with Hardy, where it was just two guys. Yeah.
But getting back to my match of the week, my match of the week was the shortest match of the week, and that was Kenny Omega versus Sonny Kiss. When Justin Roberts started introducing Kenny Omega and this long list of accomplishments highlighted by he's once wrestled in North Carolina, I knew that something was going to be different. The music hits, and I'm like, ooh, okay. I'm waiting. And they bring out the girls with the brooms, and then you see Kenny's silhouette. And I say to my wife, I'm going to scream like a little girl if he comes out and he's wearing aviators. Like, that's all that I need right now. I just need the cleaner back. And no aviators, but he comes out, V-trigger, one winged angel, 1, 2, 3, good night, Sonny. The fact that his introduction was longer than the match was priceless. And then on top of that, after the match, Kenny is like trying this phony baby face, trying to put over his opponent. Like he's just had this 60-minute classic with the guy. And Sonny's just looking at him like, you just obliterate, why are you raising, what is going on? And it's just such a beautiful thing watching how AEW is trying to present people that have been baby faces as transitioning into being a heel. Cause I would argue that they've been doing that with Cody for a long time, and seeing his reactions after matches has been priceless. But this whole package, this genuine squash, was my match of the week.
The, you know, where the whole, I mean, I'm sure that this is not the first person to do it, but the one that I remember with the long introduction is vintage heel American Dragon Ring of Honor 2006 Bryan Danielson, and I'll always mark out for that. And I love Kenny Omega. That's part of why I'm hoping that Dragon goes to AEW, is to get the chance to watch those guys work together, because they've never, as like Kenny Omega and Daniel fucking Bryan, have never gotten to wrestle each other. And I think that, like, Joe, you and I might have, I might fly to Connecticut to do a COVID Mega Powers Unite handshake. if that happens. But I almost jokingly picked that because we did what we've been waiting for from Kenny.
I was shocked. I thought somebody might put him for heel of the week because, you know, there's no doubt that he is heel now. And it was pretty abrupt. I mean, I know they had a few hints of it, but there was no doubt after this match. And again, little things that, you know, AEW does well is having Sonny be the person that he squashed, I think is also brilliant, because we know all the support that Sonny's got on social media and, you know, the opportunity that they give. And then to have, you know, this heel turn kind of solidified by him squashing Sonny, I thought that was just a smart little, you know, extra dimension to the entire angle.
I was tweeting that I was very upset that Sonny was in the match, because they, AEW has this ranking system. Like, why isn't it Cage? Why isn't it MJF? Blah, 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 blah. And then when they pulled out the match and it was 5 seconds long, I'm like, that's why. And that it was perfect. I'm like, okay, I see you. I'm sorry. I see you.
And there's even an added layer of that because of Kenny's role as one of the EVPs.
Yep.
Which I might be what you're referring to, in which case, I'm sorry. I'm very
sorry. Oh, you're good. Sam, why don't you go ahead and do your match of the week?
Mine was also the tag team match, which I sort of felt like, and Joe is getting me to rethink, actually, and this is one of the Kai's comments I can give, how I'm going to do. Because in terms of best character getting over, he's right. It was that best quality match was easily the tag team match. I think we covered that. The one thing I would say is I would like for that first match to be a one fall match. It's one problem that I have with Johnny Gargano's AEW feuds. I mean, I'm sorry, NXT. Ooh.
like, did you just break some news for Sam?
No, Johnny Gargano's NXT feuds is that they start at like this 10, and he has these great first matches, and then he goes and he wrestles again, and it's like, bro, you gotta build some of the, and I would hope that that would be what.
But has AEW done any back-to-back pay-per-view matches? Because even Cassidy and Jericho technically did not fight right on back-to-back pay-per-views.
Well, technically they're gonna do it with Sammy and Matt.
That's fair. Okay.
But
I just was saying, I could see them having a match and then, you know, it being 6 months before those guys fight again, because that's one thing I love about AEW is they kind of keep feuds fresh by not, you know, running into the ground for 3 months.
I would be fine though with them. I mean, if there was ever irony of all of this will be if it just turns out that the FTR and the Bucks like are great tag teams, they just don't have good chemistry, and the match is just a wet bottle.
That would suck.
I don't think so, though.
That would be the biggest case of blue balls in wrestling history. We're all expecting a 7-star better than Hangman and Kenny versus the Young Bucks.
They got a lot of work to do, though. That's arguably like my favorite tag team match I've ever watched. Like, it was so good, and I did not expect that one to be that great. Ronnell, what's your match of the week?
My match of the week was the Lucha Brothers match. I am not a big like luchador fan, you know, or of that style, but the performance these two guys put on and the fact that they're brothers, you know, you had Eddie Kingston on the commentary desk, and those two guys, I mean, some of those slaps, like normally a chop doesn't really bother me when I'm watching wrestling. I like to listen for, you know, is it a good slap? You get a good perspiration come off the person, you know, how does it look? But those chops had me like, oh, like the Ray Phoenix's chest was literally turning purple by the end of that match. But those two guys, just, it was just such a brilliant bout. And, you know, I apparently they've, you know, cut their teeth fighting each other, so, you know, it's great that they knew each other so well. But just, man, I'm never really big on luchador style matches, but those two dudes brought down the house for me.
So why don't we stay with you and you can go ahead and do your promo of the week, Rono.
My promo of the week was The Miz, right before his match with Heavy Machinery. I had loved the way...
Whoa. Heavy Machinery was not on Raw.
Oh, yes, you're right. I'm sorry. with Tucker and...
That was why I chuckled, Ron. I just immediately thought of Otis and that mask and outfit. And it was just... It was like Hogan.
Wait, that was
remember?
Otis?
When he was the American, do you remember Hogan in the early 2000s?
The Patriot.
Yeah, the Patriot.
Mr. America.
Yeah, it's like he's posing and everything.
I know, doing the pose.
Oh, it cracks me up.
But just the way The Miz was talking about, and you know, me being a prestige junkie, he was talking about, you know, bringing prestige back to the Money in the Bank. The way he talked about, I am what championship material looks like, not you. You know, they're building it up really great, even though we know that Otis will not be cashing in successfully. At least there's nothing pointing to it. I just thought it was a fantastic promo in that Miz was really trying to just bring value back to the Money in the Bank, and hopefully, you know, maybe next year we get a more viable Money in the Bank, and maybe someone who we can think is like, this dude actually has a shot at really cashing it in.
Take, I think they moved him to Raw because he is going to successfully cash in.
He's on SmackDown.
Oh, is he on SmackDown? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
Tucker's on Raw.
Again, I would love to do it. Stop. He's already dead. With Otis cashing in on SmackDown. Like, if you want to see heel ass Roman Reigns, like, just grind Otis into a ham colored paste.
I'll go ahead and do my promo of the week. It's technically a combo. I know the opening segment, they didn't really say anything other than just that we're, you know, Monday Night Raw, but it was Alexa Bliss and Bray Wyatt, the Firefly Funhouse, you know, I don't even know what you call those. I guess technically they're a promo. Yeah, vignettes. I loved the opening segment. Now, don't get me wrong. I guess if you're not going to flinch at guys jumping you, it's probably going to be retribution. That's not going to scare you. But I love the presentation of it. I really did. I love the way they were holding hands. You know, they didn't move. And then, of course, the, you know, Undertaker type move where lights go out, they come back on, they're gone. And then I really enjoyed the Firefly Funhouse and just, you know, basically saying we're here. And I am so excited about Alexa Bliss and Bray Wyatt being together on WWE programming, because I've said this before, but I think they're the best two actors, if you will, in WWE. Bray Wyatt has made some of the craziest things in wrestling work. I mean, I just think about the Mr. Rogers character. Remember our initial reaction, like that first week, was a lot of people are like, what? Like, this is what you're going to do with Bray Wyatt? And it's worked. And Alexa Bliss has been great and everything she's done. I loved her as her heel title run. I didn't really understand the Alexa Nia Jax WrestleMania feud, because it's like you have one of the most liked. heel people versus, you know, one of the most disliked people that you're going to make the baby face. But anyway, I can't wait to see what these two have in store. And they just need to take over Raw, which I think that's what they're going to do. Because if you notice, they opened the show, and then obviously they also had the Firefly Funhouse. And I said that last week when they got drafted, that it made so much sense to put them on your three-hour show because they can take up blocks, not only with matches in the ring, but also with a bunch of cool stuff, with promos, vignettes, etc. Joe, what is your promo of the week?
Well, the obvious answer is them showing Eddie Kingston going off the air from last week. However, I'm going to give a nod to my boy, the muscle pervert, John Silver, for promo of the week, for the sheer fact that they gave him a promo slot on AEW Dynamite. This guy is genuinely one of the funniest people in wrestling. If you haven't seen him on BTE, you are missing out. And he is also an incredible worker. I've seen him in Beyond Wrestling several times, and he's lightning fast, and he's so strong it blows your mind. Like, he literally is one of the smallest people in that locker room, not named Marco Stunt. And he,
you have a comp one of the, for like his character for people that don't know him.
Just the two words that they keep calling him, muscle pervert.
No. I'm talking about like a comp, like to a wrestler either in the past or.
Oh, you know, a comp. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I said Cesaro, if you put him in the dryer.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. Cesaro, if you put him in the dryer.
That dude reminds me of, you guys remember that movie Hall Pass?
Yes.
I remember
so it. Do you remember the DJ dude who was trying to get with the Australian chick?
I do not. All I remember, I'm with Joe.
Okay. All right. Well, if you ever watch Hall Pass, that's who Joe's promo guy reminds me of. Because when he was doing that thing, especially right before the Colt Cabana's match, I was just thinking of that scene in Hall Pass when he was upset with the Aussie chick. But anyway.
Sam, have you done your promo?
I was going to say MJF, Jericho. We've talked about that. The one thing that I would like to give a little bit of praise to, because the WWE almost never does this, though, is Mustafa Ali referencing that he was the hacker. Mm. I really, like, you have so much history. You have all this stuff. Like, acknowledge it.
They've done a better job lately, though, right? Because there was something else a couple of weeks ago we were talking about that we couldn't believe they brought up.
And they tied something else together. Shoot. No, yes. I can't. I remember us bringing that up, and now I can't remember exactly what that story was.
I will say, though, Joe, I hope that you'll get this reference, but you might be a younger millennial on this one. If Bray Wyatt is building his Dark Pee-wee's Playhouse,
oh.
I desperately want Titus O'Neil as Cowboy Curtis, his evil Cowboy Curtis.
No one? Titus is kind of out there in the fold, so I could see them doing literally anything with him. They made a point to draft him. They made a point to not, I mean, I don't want to play the race card, but they made a point to not put him with the Hurt Business.
No, this is not the race
card. He'll be feuding with him though soon, right, Sam? Sam has a theory that basically if you look at Vince McMahon and their history, like the worst thing is when they have black superstars, they're always feuding with other black superstars.
They do it with the Latino superstars too.
Yeah.
That's fair, actually. Yeah, you're right.
Vince is like, why can't together. They should always be tagging or wrestling. Like, Vince grew up in segregated North Carolina. Like, let's in a trailer park. Like, he is who he is.
All right, so let's move on to the storyline you need to pay attention to. I am most excited about the potential Rollins-Daniel Bryan program. I'm hoping that wasn't just a tease, and it could be, but it appeared like that was kind of what I got out of that promo, other than just putting over the entire roster, obviously, was these two guys are going to eventually feud. And I was asking Sam today when we talked on the phone, I know they had a few like singles and tag team matches and Raw and obviously six-man tag when it was the Shield and Team Hell No, but I'm almost positive they have never had a feud in WWE. And Sam is, you know, spoke wonders about some of their feuds and their previous, you know, wrestling promotions. So I just can't wait to see these guys. And I know both of them don't work quite the same because obviously Brian has the, you know, neck and head issues. Rollins has never worked quite as fast since he had the knee injury, but they're still two of the best wrestlers in the game. And I think it's awesome. Like Rollins can be such an annoying heel. And obviously Daniel Bryan is one of your most popular faces in the last decade. If you know, it's going to be something that crowds could really get behind. It's probably going to be watching through your computer or TV screen, but maybe one day we'll get to see them fight in person as well. But I'm really excited to see the Rollins Bryan program that it looks like we're headed to. Sam, what was your storyline?
My storyline of the week is the inevitable that we're very clearly starting for towards Hangman Page versus very serious singles wrestler Kenny Omega. I'm just like, as somebody who, like, not to brag, but I've seen Seth Rollins wrestle Daniel Bryan on my birthday on Raw in 2013, and I saw them wrestle to a 15-minute draw in March of 2009. Oh, but I'm really
share all the other thing you said to me today because it's interesting. I think Joe would want to hear it. Who do you said who you think is going to end up taking the title from Moxley?
I think it's Kenny Omega. It has to be Kenny Omega.
Yeah, has to be.
There's okay. And he needs to, like,
Mox gets one more defense. He's beating Kingston, and then it's done.
Okay.
Yeah, we need that. I want to see, like,
so do you think the Hangman Page feud is put on hold until after Omega wins the belt, or do you think they fight
if before? I'm okay, that's what I'm saying. I think they wrestle in this tournament, and I think that there's some kind
that would be the finals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Is that right?
Yes,
that'll be the finals. There'll be some kind of healing from Kenny Omega, some big heel move. Maybe he'll cheat to win. I don't know. Maybe he'll do something, and he's going to – I'm hoping that he beats Moxley the way that Brody Lee beat Cody Rhodes.
Mm.
Like, you – I want to set up, like, Kenny Omega. Like, we've been waiting to get to the fireworks factory with him since it started.
I just don't know if they'd do that to Moxley, though, at this point, right?
He's bulletproof. Why not? He'll been champion for well over a year at that point.
He can take that loss.
Pretty made man now.
Yeah, I
guess you're right. John Cena took that loss, so I mean, if John Cena can take
Cody it, ate anybody, that loss in pride.
Yep.
Yeah.
Came back with a weird hair color though. So
for 2 weeks,
looked like Green Day. Ronel, what is your storyline you need to pay attention to?
To back off of your promo of the week, mine is Will is the Hurt Business next in line to the Fiend, since he was talking about I'm getting my friends. He went after and squashed Retribution, and the Hurt Business happened to be a bystander, and they did flash when he had mentioned my friends, and he showed both Retribution and them. So I'm wondering, will the Fiend be attempting to destroy the Hurt Business?
Joe, what is your storyline?
I'm gonna go with Retribution and watching what happens next, because WWE is pretty good at picking up pieces of the mistakes that they've made. And we saw Retribution both get buried and resurrected on Raw this week. Starting out the show with the Fiend not even flinching at five of them surrounding him.
Sure, I didn't think
him
about that.
Then choking out T-Bar, or whatever the hell his name is, after T-Bar had already tapped out to Bobby Lashley. So T-Bar is totally dead and buried right now. I'm sorry, Dominik Dijakovic, you are one of the best performers that WWE has right now, and they don't appreciate you. But then for them to bring them back almost with the audacity of, hey, we're going to put them on the screen now in a positive light. Like, it was one of the most confusing things I've seen happen on Raw. They clearly buried them. And then they're like, oh, by the way, we have this new cool storyline because Ali was the hacker on SmackDown, don't you know? And I'm curious to see what's going to happen, because I can see them almost doing a 180 next week. I can see them coming out without those stupid masks. I could see them maybe going back to their old names. I could see them keeping Retribution. Keep that. But there's no use in calling Shane Thorne Slapjack other than the hell the fact that it's funny.
That's
the,
their
it's the greatest wrestling name.
That's their change. I can dig that.
Yeah. And I can see them actually becoming a solid mid-card faction. They are never going to be even on the Nexus's level.
They got some
They're always
going to
be
right?
this like C-level mid-tier faction, but I can see them salvaging what they have and creating something that they can then spin off with it.
They would be great as the heaters for somebody. Like if you had, I actually, you know, Seth Rollins isn't on the card anymore, but they would be great as heaters for Seth Rollins. If they want to push Ali, great. Like he would be, they would be great heaters for him. I think that's the, but you're right. They're on their own. I think that's that every faction you should have the Ric Flair, the Triple H, the, you know, the whoever you want, the Hulk Hogan. I'm not covering myself in glory with factions here, but the guy who is the leader of the faction, who the faction is designed to sort of protect. And then you should have the goons.
So before we do the last superlative of the week, and then we'll get into Hell in a Cell, there was one thing I wanted to ask you guys, because I'm still not totally sure where this is going. What do you think the end game is for MJF Jericho? Are they going to really team up, or do you think it's just leading for maybe a quick team up and then a feud?
I think that MJF is going to break up the inner circle.
Ooh.
I think that MJF is going to start by pushing Sammy Guevara out in some way, shape, or form. And then I think through various different ways, he's going to whittle it down to it's just him and Chris.
Break it from like within, basically.
Yeah, break it from within. And then eventually, maybe by the time All Out next year rolls around, we're seeing a genuine Jericho MJF match. I've said this time and again, I think ultimately in 20 years, we're going to look at MJF and Chris Jericho is going to be that little guy's floor. I think he's going to be one of the greatest characters wrestling has ever seen. He has the mic skills of a goat right now. He has the ability to improve over the next God knows how long. He's not one of these spot monkeys doing flips and dives all the time. So he's not at risk of destroying his body prematurely. I think he's going to show everybody that he is the next coming of a Jericho-like character in the world of wrestling. And this is going to be the jumping off point for that.
I'm a huge MJF fan. I think the, you know, sky's the limit. The only thing I say for a floor, it's like Jericho was such a good wrestler at a young age. And I think MJF is really good, but I don't think he's on the level that Jericho was at this age in like ECW or even when he first went to WCW in the ring. Now, he was already better on the mic. A lot of that's opportunity because he gets to speak a lot more than Jericho did in the beginning. But I mean, just like, I know it's hard to remember because Jericho's getting fat and he's not, you know, quite the wrestler, but Jericho was so incredible in the mid like 90s, late 90s in the ring.
Yeah.
In terms of where I think MJF, I actually thought that it might be MJF taking over the inner circle and turning Jericho face.
That would be fun too.
I'm sort of interested to see where this goes. I am not as high as MJF just because I am not ready to say that a 24, 25 year old kid is going to be one of the greatest of all time.
I like sports prospects, man. Like, I'm all in on that.
You're talking to a guy who said that I've said that I thought that Matt Riddle was the most can't miss prospect since,
good.
I said that last year.
Okay.
Yeah, it was before speaking out. But I just thought because of his look and the catchphrase, like I thought in the MMA
background. If he was 10 years younger, totally.
If he doesn't get fired. Real quickly, before we get into Hell in a Cell, Sam, what show won the week for you?
It's got to be AEW. I thought that, and I have a bit of a different perspective than you guys watching this because of the West Coast thing, but knowing what happens, and it was still so entertaining to me. I thought SmackDown did a really good job, and even Raw was serviceable, and NXT was fine, not great.
Mm-hmm. But NXT has been weak lately.
NXT hurt.
NXT's been really weak lately, in my opinion. I love NXT, but
I love NXT too. The only thing I'm really excited about in NXT is the women's division.
Yep.
But yeah,
they've had some bad luck too. In fairness, they've had hell of injuries. Rana, who won the week for you show wise?
Yeah, it's AEW, and it's really not even close. Like, all of those first round matches were absolutely brilliant. It actually got me thinking about the women's division. I don't remember the name of the young lady who had fought Britt Baker, but she's going to be good if she sticks around in the women's division. So that's going to be another really good worker to add to the fold. Britt is just there basically to shine up the women's division. I don't know why she's not the title holder or hasn't had a shot for a while, but
and she's the only true character, in my opinion, in the women's division. That, like, there's some really great wrestlers who, you know.
You got Abaddon.
Again,
laughing at my girl,
Dr. Britt Baker. In my opinion, like, is going. I think Penelope's got a chance. You know, from a character standpoint, to be really interesting. But the quality of the matches are great. They need somebody like Britt Baker to take over the division, just because she's going to make it more interesting. With promos and that kind of stuff. Joe, what was your, I'm assuming AEW as well?
Yes. I'd like to think that it's going to be AEW by default until I'm proven wrong. SmackDown has been tremendous lately. Don't get me wrong. They, like I said in our little chat before this started, it's so refreshing when main roster WWE isn't bad. I will admit I haven't watched NXT. I haven't watched NXT weekly programming in a long time. I watched the highlights on YouTube after, but that's not the same thing. And Raw was confusing from start to end. It didn't seem like the show went one direction. Like I said, it felt like things were buried and resurrected at the same time. But yeah, AEW was great. Any show that has Le Dinner Debonair on it is the winner. Sorry.
That's what I was going to say. You know, last week I said SmackDown won, you know, by a hair over AEW, and it was mostly just because that Roman Reigns promo was incredible. This week there's a little bit more room in the sense that AEW, I mean, when you have all the matches that they did on one card, I mean, that was like a pay-per-view with the card that they had. And then also you have the Jericho MJF, but you know, just again to reiterate, it's so nice when you have two wrestling programs that you're looking forward to each week. And I'm going to just, again, I know it's for money and all these different reasons, but if Raw would go to 2 hours, it would solve so many issues with Raw as a whole, because I just really think it's so difficult to fill those 3 hours. And if you look at it, Raw has really never been the same, in my opinion, in quality since they went from 2 hours to three.
Has ever successfully done 3 hours.
Yeah, Nitro struggled too. Yep. Let's move on to Hell in a Cell. Let's start at the bottom and work our way up to the title matches. We got KO versus Aleister Black. Joe, take it in whatever direction you want. Are you interested in this? Not.
So I actually looked around. I can't find it being confirmed, but I can definitely see it happening after SmackDown, this match and the next one being announced. I think Aleister Black is the least interesting version of himself he's ever been.
I agree.
They neutered him. He was an entrance and a finishing move. That was it. And that got him super over in NXT. And they took away the entrance.
That was Taker at the beginning was an entrance and a finisher move.
Yeah. They took away the badass intro and music. They gave him this eye patch so he became Aleister Black.
Oh my God.
And then I absolutely do not want to see him win this match. Kevin Owens needs to win. He needs the momentum. Unfortunately, I think if he gets the momentum, he gets fed to Roman, probably around Royal Rumble. But that's fine. I do think Kevin Owens would make a bang up Intercontinental Champion. Yeah, I think he would make a bang up Intercontinental Champion. And the matchup with Sammy, I mean, we've seen them work magic together time and time again. So I think that would be a great next place for him to go after he beats Aleister Black.
I'd give anything just to see those guys, the way they throw punches, you know, in the middle of the ring. Nobody starts a match the way they do, or they they're throwing, you know, like haymakers at each other. Ronel, is there anything about this match? Or so actually real quickly, you got Black winning?
Me? I've got KO winning. I don't want to see Black anywhere near it.
Are you saying that's who you want winning, or who you think? I'm just asking, like, who do you think?
KO is winning this match. Okay. If it happens, Kevin Owens is winning this match.
Ronel, who you got?
I also have Kevin Owens. I'm very disappointed, like everyone else, that Aleister Black is just, I don't even have anything to put on to it that hasn't already been said. Kevin Owens should win and hopefully does.
I love the pirate thing, by the way. Yeah. Sam?
It's Kevin Owens. I did want to piggyback and say that the entrance and a finisher, like, you know, Randy Orton's been a main eventer for like 15 years. Wow. There's nothing.
Yeah.
I will never take this chance to crap on Randy Orton.
The love for Brian and the disdain for Orton is something that's very consistent on this podcast from Sam.
Yeah. He is a gym bag to me in that regard. I'm going to go around as KO. I think that it's really just sad to me to see. I agree. Like, what's happened to Aleister Black? Like, he's, you know, and they're talking about changing his gimmick. I hope that they do.
Then so, I think, oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say too. About
the match, then it will go. Sorry.
No, you're good. CBS Sports was actually, it said card. So I'm assuming that means, too, the way they had him split up, that the Mysterio Rollins Murphy, is that not official yet either?
That's not official yet either.
Okay.
Because I was looking for that info, and then they did come up, but it says 2020 Hell in a Cell predictions after it says Hell in a Cell card.
Well, that's what I get.
I can see these matches being added, definitely, though.
All right, let's do the four that we know are. Jeff Hardy versus Elias. I just want to say I'm so happy to see Elias back. He was one of my favorite, I guess, was it 2019 really that was his breakout year? Or was it 2018? I can't even remember when he first really showed up. He has been a pleasant surprise. I loved his performance this last week. He is, you know, it doesn't hurt that he looks like Macho Man Randy Savage. I hope that they have him in this match because they're going to put him over Jeff Hardy. It would be arguably one of the biggest wins of his career. I was trying to think of a bigger name that he would have beat at a pay-per-view and not just like a Raw or SmackDown. So I'm going to say Elias wins this. And again, it's just good to have him back. And I just can't wait to see over the next few months all the different people that are going to interrupt him while he's playing a song and, you know, him get really pissed off about it. So, Sam, who you got winning this match?
I have Elias. I also would say that I think this was the storyline that we were talking about where they paid, because remember.
Oh, yeah, it was. You're right. Because he was the one that Sheamus convinced, you know, hit him with his car and.
Yeah, it's Elias, and I'm glad to see Elias back. I think that it's a great heel. Like, we've seen it with The Rock. We've seen it with Jericho. Like, singing mean songs about faces is a great heel gimmick. It's just, it is what it is, and I'm never going to hate on it. So, yeah, I would hope that Elias wins this.
Ron out.
Got to be Elias. Coming back, we got to get some kind of momentum. We don't want to get excited about his return and just, you know, stifle him out the gate.
Joe?
Nell's a man of few words.
Usually not.
I definitely think Elias has to win this match because if you think about it, Jeff Hardy, it was framed as the drunk driving assailant. So like that does kind of make him the heel in this match. I actually just saw that there's a comment on the Hell in a Cell predictions video that I just threw up on Mark's name, Joe, cheap plug.
You're gonna get a plug at the end, man. Trust me. You ain't got a cheap plug.
No, I understand. But somebody just commented that they think there's gonna be a swerve where it turns out that Elias and Sheamus set up Jeff Hardy. And I'm like, oh, that could be interesting. That would make it fun. But I don't think there's Jeff Hardy doesn't need this win one, but that hasn't stopped WWE before. Elias came back, badass rock concert, and it, like, that was fun. And I think Elias being this new expanded version of his character is fun. He's right where he needs to be on the show that needs more stuff to fill time. So I think we're going to see him getting a big push. And I think it starts on Sunday beating Jeff Hardy.
Elias Samson. Maybe they'll give him back his last name.
So the next match we're going to talk about, and it's hard to believe we're finally here. For those that have been listening to the Team Turnbuckle podcast from the beginning, we have been discussing when is Sasha and Bayley going to actually feud and have a match for, I swear to God, the entire year and a half. We've been doing this podcast and we're here.
Since January.
real quick before we get to the prediction, what was the deal with Bailey not signing? Is it just a heel move, or are we leading to something else here?
Heel move.
Okay.
I hope that it's just a heel move, but that maybe that's how they delay the Hell in the Cell. I mean,
totally not GM Adam Pearce is going to make her sign.
Come on. Who among us is not aware of the famous Adam Pearce, who was not watching like the independents in the a decade ago? I will say that I've talked to Keith about this. It's one thing that annoys me about the WWE is when you have this yearly, I think Hell in a Cell should be a stipulation that you pull out. It is not a yearly thing. I think that now, that being said, if ever there was a match that Hell in a Cell was deserved for, it's Bayley Sasha. Like, it is supposed to be a match where you have two people who want to hurt each other and you're going to give them that chance. And I'm hoping that the not signing thing is that we're going to delay this match. You know, I think that draw it out, you know, make Bayley a heel. I think Sasha is, I can't believe that we're at a point where Bayley and Sami Zayn are two of the best heels on television, but.
And Roman Reigns.
Yeah. Well, no, Roman, I mean, that's more because I never thought Vince would actually do that, but I think that.
I wasn't sure it was going to work, though. I mean, just to be honest, like, you know, his promo work has been, it's proven that his face work was so bad on the mic because it was so scripted. Because
it's teeth. It's got to be the teeth.
Well, that's fair too.
I think also
having your prediction. Who you got winning this match, Rono?
Oh my God!
If it happens,
I'm also under the impression that it was just a heel move and that we actually do get this match. Everything in me is saying that Sasha is going to win, and she's supposed to win here. I just have a hard time actually thinking it's going to really happen, but I'm still going to stick with Sasha Banks. It seems like they're going to save this. I mean, we've talked about it here that this seems like this is a moment they need to save for Mania. Even though there's not much more you can really do in terms of Bayley, in terms having this being the longest women's SmackDown championship reign, outside of like a serious injury to Sasha right now, to be able to put this further down the road, I don't see a reason that Sasha does not win.
Yeah, I think when they made it a Hell in a Cell match, that was pretty much your answer, that Sasha is going to get the belt, because I could have seen, and that's why I was asking about the not signing the contract, maybe Bayley somehow weasels out of it not being a Hell in a Cell match since we already have two of them. Then I could see her, you know, whether it be disqualification, you know, count out, she cheats to win, whatever, somehow getting out with the title. But I don't know how you can build this feud up, have Hell in a Cell, and then have Bayley go over. It just, especially with Sasha's history of just like, I mean, Sasha's almost like Charlie Brown with the title, because I mean, I think she's, what, a 5-time champion, and she's never even defended it. Never even defended it. I mean, that is insane. I you know, get mad about people that say, you know, oh, Roman Reigns is, you know, overbooked. And it's like, Reigns is only, I think his longest title reigns like 90 days. Sasha can't even get through her first defense. So it's like, if somebody should complain, it should be Sasha. So I've got Sasha going over, but I do want to kind of jump on what Sam was saying. Not only should they not be doing Hell in a Cell as this individual pay-per-view, I don't really want to see three of these. And I'm really disappointed. The Roman Reigns match would have been fine as an I Quit match. It actually probably would be better as just an I Quit match. I don't really understand why they had to put it in Hell in a Cell, even though it is cool to, you know, it's finally a new gimmick inside Hell in a Cell. But I just, three of them, especially since they've gone to the red cage, it's kind of hard to watch too. So it is what it is. But I got Sasha. Joe, who you got winning this thing?
So I'm going to keep kicking the dead horse of Hell in a Cell for a second first. It's a feud ender. It should be a feud ender. It should be something that is called out. It should be something that you are like, oh my God, when somebody says Hell in a Cell. But no, we know it's coming in October. It's pointless. And the last two main events for Hell in a Cell have ruined the pay-per-view forever in my mind.
I forgot.
The Fiend, oh my God, Rollins non-finish.
Yeah.
It's Hell in a Cell.
I forgot.
Every time I think of Hell in a Cell, my mind goes back to Armageddon, goes back to the six-man chaos where they killed each other before the match even started. The cage wasn't down yet and everyone's dead. Like, that's what I the want out of this. And you can't, we can't hit Bray Wyatt with a hammer. No. And then freaking Brock Lesnar coming in and F5ing people in the show closing. Okay.
Wait. Last year, all I remember was a Virtual Boy demonstration. I didn't.
But back to this match. I think that this match is going to tell a couple of great stories. I think, you know, Sasha Banks is going to win this match, and I will be completely heartbroken if she does not. But I think coming out of this, they're going to tell the story of, Bayley's going to cut a promo saying it doesn't matter that Sasha beat her because she's going to get the belt back tonight on SmackDown. And Sasha Banks is going to come out and she is just going to be like, all right, let's do this right now. And she's going to demolish Bayley. And then she's going to cut a promo about how that blue belt's not going anywhere. Because all of those 0-5s, those have been Raw women's title matches. Yeah. So let's say the Raw women's title and Sasha Banks are cursed. What was that?
Were they all against Charlotte?
No, Alexa Bliss beat her once, okay. I think. And didn't Bayley? No, Bayley didn't beat her this last time. Asuka beat her this last time.
I was trying to remember if it was
but
all Charlotte.
I think that we're gonna, unfortunately, because I love when titles change hands frequently, not like hot shot. Like I don't want it to be like, oh, it's been 2 weeks, new champion. But I like when a few people get a chance to hold the belt throughout the course of the year. But I would love to see her go on this torrid. She beats everybody on the roster several times in title matches, proving everybody wrong and just making that blue belt awesome.
Her and Reigns both deserve that. Like her and Reigns, for what their longest title reigns have been and who they are, they both deserve lengthy title runs.
She needs an entrance at WrestleMania 37 in Raymond James Stadium in front of people with her cousin Snoop Dogg rapping her intro live in person. And like, she needs that. And she's going to do it coming out in a low rider, giving a callback to Eddie Guerrero.
Awesome.
And it's going to be such a great moment. And I'm going to cry like a small child.
Sam? So,
I will
I'm going the opposite direction. I think Bayley wins, and I just knowing the WWE, I think this is when Tamina comes out again.
Oh my God. Dude.
Oh God.
Dude. I
almost spat out my drink.
What are you doing?
If this happens, I'm going to find you.
I saw that.
Yeah. If they're listening to this podcast and now they just rewrote the ending of the match. Thanks a lot, Sam.
I have an idea, boy. So I'm going to – no. Here's why. So I figured that they're not just going to do one match with this. They're going to – this is going to be another Randy Orton type – Randy Orton McIntyre feud where they wrestle two or three times. I'm going with – and I looked at the – surreptitiously looked at the SmackDown roster, and the only heater that they have – I mean, well, the only big woman that they have is – yeah, heater implies heat. Is Nina, and I think that they'll, to keep them apart, that's what they'll do. That's the only person that I can see. Maybe Bianca Belair,
Ronda.
I don't know. Mo was the one who saved them. But yeah, I think that they're gonna do some sort of wacky finish to prolong this feud. And I'm picking Bayley. I don't think it's clean, but I'm picking Bayley.
So we've got two more world title Hell in a Cell matches. Let's do McIntyre Orton first. I really am confused if Orton does not win this, because I just don't understand why they keep fighting and they keep this story going. If he's not eventually gonna get the belt, I told the guys on previous podcasts, the fact that they've mentioned how many times he's been champion so many times, I felt like it was a red herring, and it's basically a giveaway that he's going to at least get one more. And I really do think, you know, if Orton gets the title win here, it's probably going to be his last one. So it's going to be the end of his, you know, title number, which is so impressive. Even though if you look at the era, obviously it's not a coincidence that two guys, you know, both have moved up the ranks with Cena tied with Flair, and, you know, Orton only a few behind, or I guess one behind Triple H or two behind, but, So I think Orton's going to win this match. I think it would be good for McIntyre too, honestly. And it was what I was saying earlier. It's not McIntyre's fault. It's just difficult being the world champion right now because there's no crowd, there's no reaction. And I actually think it would do some good for him. Put the belt on Orton, change up the main event scene. You could even have somebody cost McIntyre, you know, the title. I don't care. I just want something to change up. And again, if it ends up being McIntyre going over Orton for what, a third straight pay-per-view, I'm just going to be a little confused. I don't remember any feud going from SummerSlam to Hell in a Cell ever. So it just would be a little bit interesting. Joe, who you got?
I'm right with you. If it's not Orton, why are we doing this? All summer long, I've been saying it's going to be Orton. It's going to be Orton. It's going to be Orton. I'm really down on the fact that I think that WWE wants to pull the trigger on Orton versus Edge for the title at WrestleMania 37. I really hope that that doesn't happen because I don't want to see Orton hold that belt that long. Like, and there's no point in this match happening if Drew McIntyre is just going to win again. And the angle that they tried to send us home with on Monday Night Raw really sat poorly with me because they had Orton sitting inside the cage, just sitting inside the cage. He had a message from hell and he's just sitting on a chair in the cage. And Drew McIntyre comes out with bolt cutters and he gets into the cage and he just stands there and looks at him.
As one does.
What? Like, I don't understand why. Like, this has cooled off so tremendously from where it started, and it feels like, well, who else is going to go out there and face McIntyre right now? So it's got to be Randy Orton to begin with. But if he doesn't win this title match, I'm
especially with the way the ambulance match ended, right? Like, it was kind of a perfect ending to that story. You know, he screwed over all those veterans. They all played a role in McIntyre getting the win. Like, I thought it was over, and then here we are. So I'm just confused. Ron Howell, who you got, buddy?
Yeah, it's gotta be Randy. I mean, I love Drew. Thank you for, you had a really great run. You should have, barring any significant injuries, you should have many more titles in your future. And, you know, let's get something else going. Let's see what kind of program we can line up next for Randy.
Maybe AJ Styles Orton. That's what I'm hoping it leads to.
That wouldn't be a bad one. It's just, you know, will they do the heel on heel for Monday night would be the question. But then again, when it comes to the title, you know, everybody, that's what everybody wants. So the fact that it would be two heels wouldn't be a terrible thing. But yeah, it's got to be Randy Orton.
Samuel?
Oh, I'm going with Drew.
Contrarian.
It is. You guys have too much faith in the WWE's booking.
You might be right about that.
I don't know if now let me say this. I don't even know. Well, my pick is in part because Triple H said that he thought that Drew Roman could be their Rock Austin, and next month the Survivor Series. I would be shocked if they weren't going to do that match there. The only thing that I might see, and I really am just sort of spitballing here, is Orton wins and then Otis cashes in. It is a, you know, and Orton, and he holds the title for like a night, you know, something goofy like that to get him on Raw. That's the only, but I think Drew wins, and I think we get a program to set up. Eventually we're going to get Drew versus Keith Lee for Mania.
Don't you think, though, it would make more sense if he believes that to not have McIntyre face Reigns at Survivor Series with somebody from NXT in the match and instead save that for, you know,
that assumes NXT is still invited.
That's fair because it's pretty bad. That's actually a very good point. And they don't even have a champion really right now.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to touch anybody with the NXT title.
No kidding.
Right.
It's cursed.
It's right now. It definitely is. So the last match is Reigns versus Uso, first ever Hell in a Cell match with the stipulation of I quit. I'm very excited about this match, mostly because when this feud started, I thought it was going to lead to Jey Uso basically being beaten into becoming Reigns' lackey, you know, both Usos actually eventually becoming, you know, his henchmen, because it would make sense with him being the tribal chief, with him being heel. I think Jey Uso has done such a fantastic job that I think it would be unfair to put him in that role, because even after he loses his feud, and by the way, Reigns will win, I think that he's done enough to where he deserves a chance to be a single star for a little bit. Let him maybe try to, you know, go after the IC belt, or even just put him in an interesting feud with, there's a lot of good heels on SmackDown. But like I said, what I'm most interested in is just what's going to happen, because, you know, Reigns said it immediately on SmackDown after their last match, that, you know, it was going to be the biggest stakes of your life. I talked about on the promo the week after they made it the I Quit match that, you know, again, he brought up that, you know, you're going to pay for it after you say I quit, and it's going to be, you know, the biggest stipulation of your life. So I'm just curious to see where they're going with this at this point. And a year ago, I'd have been really nervous. And with most other storylines, I'd be really nervous. But they have done such a good job with this Reigns heel turn, and just almost everything about it has been so good that I'm just excited to see where it goes. But I think Reigns wins, and I think it's going to get brutal. And I also just, FYI, love that you actually had Reigns use a submission move and get somebody to tap out on SmackDown, because – I don't know if it would have been weird to see it in Hell in a Cell, because I cannot remember him basically ever even using a submission move, much less getting anybody to tap out or say I quit. Ronel, who you got in this match?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Roman. I think I'm going to go back to what I had said when they had when he had first said the highest stakes. I think it's really going to be about him making him persona non grata in the family, something like, you know, something like that to tie it on. That's probably going to be what he drops on us this Friday. And Jay's going to put on a really great effort. They're probably going to put on a really good match in this Hell in a Cell, and with it being in a Hell in a Cell gives Jay more opportunities to look where he may actually go over. But in the end, you know, the big dog wins out.
Joe.
So I'm going to, you know, bury myself a little bit here. I just Googled what persona non grata means, because my education in here today was awful.
He says things all the time that I don't know what they mean. So don't
So Google defines it as an unacceptable or unwelcome person. And that's right in line with where I think that I'm going. I'm not interested in picking the winner, because the winner is Roman Reigns. The big interesting thing is, what is this the highest stakes that Jey Uso has ever faced? And I genuinely think that with the way that they've built this feud around this family, they are going to say that, like, there's going to be another impressive video package. They're going to pull back the kayfabe curtain again. They'll call Roman Reigns Joe Anoa'i. He's already called himself that before. They'll call him Joshua Fatu, or whatever his first name is. He's one of the two. And they're going to, I think Roman is going to make him renounce the last name Fatu. Ooh. And I think that that is going to be the stake. He quits being a member of his own family. And I think that ultimately, to tie in Keith's idea, I do think that he's going to need to serve Roman Reigns as the tribal chief in order to come back into the graces of the family. I think there needs to be something compelling like that to really sell this, the highest stakes ever thing. I want to put out there that I think this is the best thing I've seen from WWE, at least in my return to watching the company, because I took
when
a big
hiatus.
When was
that? Hiatus. I forgot. I know you
it was 2016 was when I came back. So in the last 3 years and change, I think this is the best thing.
Yeah, we were around
I
the same time, actually.
Really? Yeah, better than Kofi Mania?
Kofi Mania was really good, and it felt really good, and it felt like it was very well deserved, but it felt
partially manufactured.
It was great that the fans convinced Vince to do it. I don't feel like without the fans rallying around Kofi that it would have ever happened. It was supposed to be Mustafa Ali's spot, but Mustafa Ali wouldn't have gotten a WrestleMania match going over Daniel Bryan. I think it's a beautiful story that they told. Do not get me wrong. That is top five things. But I really do think that this tribal chief heel turn, because Roman is adding a new layer every time he's in the ring too. The, like you said, the submission move, the taking off the vest. I genuinely think we're also going to see new entrance music for him at Hell in a Cell. I think that that's going to be how they package him, how he comes out. It's going to be like the darkest thing Moana ever did, or if that's a thing, I don't know. And Moana 3 is going to be pretty freaking weird, because Moana 2 was already pretty nuts with their first match. So I do think the stake is he's going to have to renounce his last name, and then we're going to go from there.
I just hope this Reigns angle can keep going, because I think it was on the Masked Man show. They said that if he keeps doing this good of work, you know, on the like acting side, he's going to be in a spinoff Hobbs and Shaw franchise.
No, he doesn't. Yeah,
stop speaking.
That's what I'm saying. I'm worried about it, like, because it's, stop, you know, it's that good. Into existence. Sam, go ahead. What you got, buddy?
I am obviously Roman. I'm thinking that there might be a heel turn from Jimmy, because that I think that that's how we'll get this finished. Vince loves nothing like that. There's that the gift set of Vince, like the three picture set of him like losing his shit when he
But wouldn't that be so disappointing? Because that would mean Reigns is gonna need help to win, correct?
No.
You think like a post match deal where he turns on him?
I think Jimmy throws in the towel again.
Oh, okay. Well, that would make sense, because then Jay doesn't technically quit. I could deal with that.
Joe, I just have to throw in real quickly, you calling this Moana 2 was shades of, and this is going to be before your time, so I'm going to need you to look this up, Bobby Heenan saying, "That's it, Steamboat. That's using your pineapple juice." Jake Roberts teeing him on the apron on Saturday night's main event.
All right, I'll look it up.
All right. Is there anything that we missed?
No.
Okay. Well, let's we're going to close the show here. Joe, I want you to definitely plug your podcast, YouTube channel, Twitter, all that stuff, because I want people to be able to check you out.
All right. So, yeah, thank you guys again for having me on. This was a blast, as always. And we'll have to have the three of you on. I guess we'll Joe and I will have to find a third person named Joe to even the
six-man tag match.
Yeah, six-man tag match. There we go.
That's Mojo. I'm just...
But like I said earlier, you can find me on Twitter at Keep Up with the Letter K, Fabe. You can also find my podcast on YouTube. It is Mark's Named Joe. We don't have an audio version of the podcast yet, because we're trying to keep things as simple as we possibly can at the moment. But yeah, Mark's Named Joe. We just uploaded a video today. This is Thursday, coming in with our Hell in a Cell predictions. And so, yeah, that's about all I got to say. Again,
was there any surprising point totals with your picks today?
Well, actually, the point of our point totals this time is we're going to do a fantasy all-time draft of every wrestler, of every promotion of all time. We're going to create our own brands, and whoever wins gets the first pick.
Oh, cool.
It was also a way to chicken out, because we've had two guests. Now we've had you guys, and we had Stephanie Hypes, and we got beat both times.
That's what...
So if you can't beat them, then don't cheat, even invite them.
Change
on
the format.
Yeah, we're going to change the rules.
Why cheat steal?
Ron, how you got anything you want to plug, buddy?
Yes, as always, harvestcreditors.com. You can find me at official Ron L. Tinsley on Instagram, Ron L. Tinsley on Facebook. If you need help cleaning up your credit score, anything on your credit report, get at me. Mention the Team Turnbuckle podcast and save $100 on starting your credit repair services, including the ability to write your living will, trust, and power of attorney. And this lovely hat that I'm wearing, check out t.e.d845. That's Ted with periods in between each letter, 845. That's if you're into hip hop, and check out his latest LP entitled Sheesh.
Samuel,
plug my Twitter account. It is my first initial, my last name, S How H-O-U-G-H 610. Also want to plug the Team Turnbuckle Twitter account, which is Team Turnbuckle. The All-Star benefit with IBN Sports.
It's Purge Week. You better be an All-Star.
Yeah. It's funny stuff going on right now, too.
Why do you think I'm promoting it? I also want to promote
There is a comedy show that I love in Los Angeles called A Drinking Game. They do a live performative script reading of a movie. There are certain words and phrases that the audience drinks during. They are doing a free streaming show, 8 o'clock Eastern time, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 7 o'clock Central. Tickets are free. They're doing Young Frankenstein this Saturday at adrinkinggame.com. It is hilarious. Highly recommend it.
So I just want to plug the IB Sports Podcast feed. We are on Anchor, iTunes, and Spotify. And specifically, we have a podcast we've been doing now for the last 5 weeks. It is the weekly daily fantasy football podcast. I'm telling you, our picks are hot fire right now. We give three players at each position on DraftKings. We pick a high tier guy, low tier guy, and a medium tier guy. Last week, some of the guys that we gave, Kyler Murray, Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, Travis Kelce, those were our high tier. The medium tier hits were Kirk Cousins, Kenny Galladay, Justin Jefferson, and Chase Claypool. And then most impressively, I want to say I gave, because I did give these guys, Travis Fulgham, Trey Burton, and Christian Kirk. And then my man Joe gave both Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brandon Cooks. Those six guys in the low tier were all under five, or excuse me, Fitzpatrick was actually 5,200, but the rest of the guys were under $5,000. They all scored at least 18 points. Trey Burton was 3,200 and he scored 21.9 points. It is free fantasy football advice, and I cannot guarantee our picks are going to be this good for forever. So you want to get them now while the train is hot. But other than that, again, please support the brand. IB Sports, the Facebook group is so much fun. It's Purge Week this week. I'm telling you, the IB Sports page on Facebook is like nothing you've ever seen. It's outstanding. It's a lot of fun. If you're ever interested in joining that, it's IB Sports on Facebook. It's also on Twitter. At IB Sports. But guys, this has been a blast. You know, I love talking wrestling with my buddies, so I appreciate that. Let's hope that Hell in a Cell is another short pay-per-view. We've discussed how WWE's been knocking it out of the park with these like 2.5-3 hours top pay-per-view. It looks like we're headed that way, but we will see you guys soon. And again, be sure to check out Joe's, not only his Twitter page, but also the Mark's Name Joe YouTube channel. Some really good stuff. And we will see you guys next week.